Hey everyone, I'm Devin.
And I'm Asia, and we're your hosts, and this is the latest episode of On Their Behalf.
So I've been watching, or rewatching rather, Parks and Rec, which is on Netflix right now. And first of all, it's making me like so happy because it's just a delight. And I love everything about it. But it's, and it, like, it has aged well, except for, like, Leslie Knope is, like, very pro-cop. And they never, like, go into police abuse or anything, obviously, because it's, like, a sitcom. So they're not going to take on heavy things. But it's, like, Ron Swanson being, like, very anti-government and everything. And then Leslie Knope being, like, super pro-government is really interesting to watch in this sort of lens that we're in right now. But then there was one episode that has nothing to do with government that I, like, literally almost had a panic attack watching because there was, like, a project that they had to do, and the whole gimmick of the episode was that the water fountains in Pawnee, the way that they everybody drinks them is that they put their whole mouth over the spigot. I know. And like watching it in like the COVID world, I was like, oh no, 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 no. I, and they're like, oh, it's just so funny. And I'm like, you have no idea,
how
triggering this is.
Actually, I was watching, I'm obsessed with cooking shows, as you know. So like I watch Chopped and like Top Chef and Food Network. And I was watching a Chopped episode where I forget, like, I think there was, like, either there was, like, alcohol or something was in the basket that everybody wanted to try. And instead of, like, the producers bringing over, like, three shots of the alcohol for the judges, they brought over one shot and each of them just took a sip out of it. And oh, I was literally, I it made my skin crawl. And then I was like, oh, well, duh, this was pre-pandemic. So, of course, that wasn't a thing. Or they weren't thinking of that. And I'm, and then it just made me think of how many times, like, even with friends or whatever, like, you're at a restaurant and you're like, oh, can I try that? And then, like, you just share things because it's not, you're not thinking of, the, of that. No. But now it's like, that's, it's literally so going to change our lives forever. Like, I will never be able to do that again.
No. Not at all. Weird. Oh, my God. So triggering.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I've been watching that is giving me a lot of joy, and I'm pretty sure I've talked about this a ton, but RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, yeah.
Just excellent. And that actually, I was watching an episode and they mentioned this case on it. And so that kind of inspired me to look into it. And this is a case that is different than the ones we normally do because it was very well publicized and has had a lasting impact. But I think is important to go over anyways, just because it's like, it's something I had heard about, but never really like looked into or understood. Like what it was. So I wanted to, I was like watching that and also trying to like brainstorm cases, and they mentioned this case, so I was like, oh well, kismet. So today I want to tell you about the murder of Matthew Shepard. So, Matthew Shepard was born on December 1st in 1976 in Casper, Wyoming. He was the oldest of two boys born to Judy and Dennis. Matthew was friendly and well-liked, but he was always kind of picked on as a kid because he was small and not very athletic. And it's like, you know, friggin' Wyoming or wherever. And they, so He got teased a lot, but still, despite that, had, like, a very sunny disposition. And then in 1994, his dad got a job at Saudi Aramco, and his family relocated to Dhahran in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, shit. But, wow.
Yeah. Which actually I think is where my, like, dad's cousins grew up too.
Mm-hmm.
Funnily enough.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of Americans over there, just from my very basic understanding of it. But Matthew actually ended up finishing high school at the American school in Switzerland.
Okay.
And he graduated in May of 1995. But while he was at the American school in Switzerland, he was very involved in theater. He learned German and Italian because he was in Switzerland and that's what they speak there.
Yeah.
After graduation, he went back to the U.S. and he went to Catawba College in North Carolina for a little bit, and then went to Casper College back in his hometown in Wyoming before he settled in at the University of Wyoming in Laramie, Wyoming. Mm-hmm. He was pursuing a political science major with a minor in languages and was the student rep for Wyoming Environmental Council. Cool. So, seems like a kid going places, like, mm-hmm. obviously with his international background that gave him an interest in politics and languages and everything. And it seems like he's kind of, like, on track to becoming, like, a UN kind of guy.
Okay.
But with an environmental spin.
Yeah.
Matthew's dad described him as, quote, an optimistic and accepting young man who had a very special gift of relating to almost everyone. He was the type of person who was very approachable and always looked to new challenges. Matthew had a great passion for equality and always stood up for acceptance of people's differences.
Hmm.
So he sounds like exactly like Leslie Knope to me.
Yeah.
Just like bubbly and wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew's friend Michelle Josu described him as a tender-hearted and kind person. But, you know, despite being optimistic and happy, Matthew faced, like, his fair share of hardships. One of them, I think, that was the sort of seminal thing, sort of, that happened in his life was in 1995, while he was at school in Switzerland. They took a class trip to Morocco where Matthew was beaten and raped.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I don't know. I couldn't really find any more details on what happened, who did it, like if it was another student, if it was people in Morocco, you know,
mm-hmm.
I didn't really find any details about that. Except for that afterwards it triggered depression and panic attacks, which actually led to multiple hospitals. Yeah, and he was hospitalized multiple times for clinical depression and suicidal tendencies.
Mm.
So he had these, like, two sides of him. One was really struggling, that found it very difficult to process, like, this extreme violence against him. And the other side that maybe was trying to mask that pain that was just, like, totally, you know, bubbly and vivacious and very outwardly expressing. Matthew was also one of, like, the only gay kids in his Wyoming.
Yeah.
Which is so lonely, you know, already isolation, everything. Plus, you are dealing with this horrible, horrible thing that happened to you. You know, it's a real struggle.
Yeah.
Did you say this already?
Is he a person of color or no?
No, he's a white.
He's white. Man. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, oh, God, like being black and gay in Wyoming. So, you know, at least he's got one thing.
I know. Well, it doesn't seem. Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting point, too, because, and like, we'll get into a little bit more, but like, this is. In, like, the post-George Floyd murder world that we're living in,
mm-hmm.
I have noticed that a lot of the knee-jerk reaction maybe to, you know, the examination of racism and prejudice and oppression, the knee-jerk reaction specifically from white gay men of a certain age
mm-hmm.
is that, like, well, I faced that too. I faced depression too.
Yeah.
And it's like, unquestionably, yes.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. However, it's like, you as a white man still have an inherent privilege mm-hmm. that black men
don't,
gay or straight,
don't have.
Don't.
Yeah.
And then black women don't times a billion.
Yeah.
So there is, like, that is something that I've, like, kind of noticed, and I haven't really, like, done a ton of reading or anything to be able to, like, process that and understand that, but it feels like a little bit of, like, oppression kind of Olympics. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that, like, and I'm not saying that there has been, like, gay men have had just a lovely time and have never been oppressed, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, the case that I'm talking about right now, he's a young white man, and this became, like, a big tentpole case for, like, mistreatment of gay people.
Yeah.
But I, just, like, to bring it sort of to today, excuse me, I stuttered, there is that sort of interesting, I say interesting as a sort of, like, mild word to try to not cast judgment, because, like, I'm on the outside of both of those communities, so I don't want to say anything wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't, I kind of don't think you should be, like, equating it like that. Like, you can be oppressed but still have privilege. Like, that's,
yeah, true. You know, yeah,
two things can be true. Okay, so back to Matthew, but the thing, what you're saying about, like, the loneliness of, like, it had he been black and gay and going through this in Wyoming, I think that's the thing that people are, like, equating that to, where it's like, well, I know what it is to be an outsider. I know what it is to do this stuff. And it's like, yes, that may be true, but
yeah,
like, you know, it also doesn't have to be about you right now. Mm-hmm. Like,
true. Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know,
there's plenty of misery to go around. Mm-hmm. However, we are talking about Matthew right now, so we are going to be talking about, like, gay issues, and Matthew is a white gay man, so mm-hmm. that's sort of what this is reflecting. But on October 6, 1998, Matthew, who is 21 at the time, was out at a bar called the Fireside Lounge in Laramie, Wyoming, and he was approached by two guys around his same age, Aaron McKinney and Russell Henderson. McKinney and Henderson agreed to give Matthew a ride home, but instead, McKinney and Henderson drove to a remote area, robbed Matthew, pistol whipped him, tortured him, ultimately tying him up and, like, stringing him up on a barbed wire fence, leaving him to die.
Oh my God.
And then I'm just going to go through this chronologically, because there's some, like, choices and stuff that are very strange, so mm-hmm. it's easier to just kind of, like, go through it chronologically.
Yeah.
So after they attack Matthew, McKinney and Henderson returned to town, where McKinney ended up picking fights with two Latinx people, Emiliano Morales and Jeremy Herrera. McKinney ended up giving Morales a head wound and receiving one himself. So I want to repeat that, because that was, like, a thing that I could not understand. But after essentially murdering somebody, like, they left Matthew alive, but, like, they knew what they were doing. They went back into town to look for more trouble and to get in more fights, which they did. And I just am... So I'm like, okay, that's all I need to know about them.
Yeah.
They're just looking for...
They're looking for...
people to hurt.
Yeah, to...
And these are also two white guys. People
to inflict pain
on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just, like, ugh, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So a police officer named Flint Waters arrived at the scene of the fight and arrested Henderson and searched McKinney's truck and found the bloody gun that they pistol whipped Matthew with, and Matthew's shoes and credit card. His credit card was with his name on it.
Okay.
So, like...
And how old are these boys? Are they the same age as Matthew?
They're 21. They're the same age as Matthew. Now, 18 hours later, still tied up on the barbed wire fence, Matthew was in a coma. And a cyclist named Aaron Kriefels discovered him after he actually, like, fell off his bike and sort of, like, sat down for a second to, like, because he got a scabbed knee or something. And he looked up at the fence and he thought it was a scarecrow. Yeah. In the fence.
It's never, and then he, like, it's never a scarecrow or a mannequin.
It's never a scarecrow. Everyone, it's never a scarecrow. It's never a mannequin.
Yeah.
It's a body.
Mm-hmm.
So he went closer and saw that it was Matthew. And apparently Matthew was beaten so brutally that his face was completely covered in blood, except for where it had been partially cleansed by his tears.
Jeez. Oh, my God.
I was, like, doing my research, and I had to stop and just, like, cry for a minute at that point. Yeah. Because, like, how...
Oh, my God.
Just... I have just so many questions.
Yeah.
So many questions about everything. So the first officer to arrive at the scene was a woman named Reggie Flutie, who found Matthew alive but covered in blood. And as she was trying to do the examination and to do, you know, because he was alive, so she was, like, going to do CPR and, you know, resuscitation kind of stuff. She was trying to put on her gloves that the sheriff's department gave her, but they kept breaking because they were so flimsy and cheap that she just was, like, in a panic and, like, needed to get him help immediately. So she just ended up not wearing gloves and used her bare hands to clear an airway in Matthew's mouth to be able to get him to breathe, which ultimately, like, you know, he's in a coma for 18 hours, excuse me, and that was the thing that allowed him to sort of stay alive a little bit more. So Matthew was transported first to Iveson Memorial Hospital in Laramie, and there, as they did his sort of, like, initial check and trauma check and injury check, blood test, everything, they discovered that he was HIV positive.
Oh, no. Ugh.
Yeah. And this is 1998, so it's, like, the AIDS crisis is still very fresh, still very real. Mm-hmm. It's still a lot of prejudice around that and misinformation and not understanding, like, you know, what to do. So the hospital informed Officer Flutie of this, and told her that she might have been exposed when she, like, because she got her hands cut trying to get him off of the barbed wire and then used, like, her hands to help him breathe. So she ended up having to do like, months long of AZT, which is the, like, HIV drug that's supposed to help regulate your white blood cell count. But then ultimately tested negative.
Okay.
Well, and good. I was like, what? I mean, yeah, that's great. But, like, how?
How?
Like, fear-based and shitty is that? That, like, that, like, I guess you have to say that. But it's also, like, like, I'm sure when that detail came out in the papers, it was, like, such a disparaging thing. And, like, oh, well, if he was HIV positive, that must mean X, Y, and Z about him and blah, 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 blah. And all this kind of stuff. And then, like, putting an officer in danger. Like, the way you could twist that is just so...
Yeah, and it's it's almost weaponizing it as if it was, like, something that Matthew being gay put him in that position. So now, because he was gay and now has HIV, he put other people in danger. But
exactly,
it's not. That's not the case. The case is, like,
no,
you know, you could be not gay and get HIV. You could be, you know what I mean? Like, it's just a way to further victimize these people. And
yeah, absolutely.
There's no basis for any of those allegations. It's just
yeah,
you know,
it's and just it's also way. At the point where it's like, if you can live a long, healthy life if you're HIV positive. Yeah. You have to be a little bit more careful about stuff, but like it, you can manage that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I think, in 1998, not necessarily an idea that people really understood.
To or them, like, that was a death like sentence.
In Wyoming.
You know, it was a death sentence to get HIV. And I mean, yes, it was for some, but...
Right. You know. Well, it was for a lot of people because there was not a lot of understanding. Mm-hmm. And it was because it was this, you know, group, mm-hmm. as we were saying earlier, that it is outsiders and, like, morally reprehensible to a lot of people.
Yeah.
So it was, like, God's punishment to them for, like, choosing, quote-unquote, to live this lifestyle. Which, like, I can't, like, say that with enough, like, sarcasm dripping in my voice because it's just ridiculous.
It's so ridiculous.
So, yeah.
Because God punishes people for stuff like that.
Right. Reggie Flutie ended up testing negatives, but Matthew's mom also didn't learn about his status until he was in the hospital. So it's unknown whether Matthew, or unknown to me, maybe somebody knows this, but whether or not Matthew knew this about himself.
Okay.
Or, you know, what? Because who... Ugh, but, like, can you imagine, like, being a mom and your child is in the hospital after being beaten like that, and then you find out that about him, and you're just, like...
Yeah, like, when does it end?
When does it end, and, like, what... How can you help him? And it's, like, he didn't have the obligation to share it with anybody, but, like...
Yeah.
If he had shared it, like, I have no doubt that his mom would have been by his side and helped him. And it's why, like, having a support and a community is so, so important.
Mm-hmm. Now, are they in Wyoming, or are they...
They're in Wyoming. Okay. Everybody moved back.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
So he was in that first hospital, and then they realized, like, his injuries were too much for them to handle. So they transferred him to a more advanced trauma unit at the Poudre Valley Hospital in Fort Collins, Colorado. And he had fractures on the back of his head and the right, like, front of his ear.
Wow.
He had severe brainstem damage, which affected his vital signs and his ability to regulate his heart rate and breathe. And when they got to Colorado in the hospital, they deemed that his injuries were too severe to operate on. Matthew never regained consciousness, and he was on life support for 6 days.
Jeez.
And ultimately, he died at 12:53 a.m. on October 12th, 1998, at 21 years old.
Oh, my God.
So, I think, like, on this side of it, like, 1998 has, like... This happened essentially, like, my whole life has happened after this happened. So this is such a thing that, like, I have heard about, and such a horrifying crime that, like, you know, it's like the boys don't cry kind of thing. And, like, there's so much media and, like, stories and movies and everything based on this specific case that always, like, really just, like, horrified me. And you see it, you see this same attitude with, like, the Pulse nightclub shooting and everything. It's like, it's not gone away, but this, I think, was one of the first times where it was, like, modern and not, you know, a modern indication of, like, a real, like, homophobically fueled murder like this. And it was, so it impacted a lot of people.
A lot of people.
So because they had found Matthew's shoes and credit card in McKinney's truck, the authorities, like, already knew who was responsible for this, and they already had at least one of them in custody for that other fight. So there was not really a big manhunt or anything. Like, it was pretty clear cut what happened. So McKinney and Henderson were arrested and initially charged with attempted murder, kidnapping, and aggravated robbery. But after Matthew died, the charges were upped to first-degree murder, so they would be eligible for the death penalty. So when that came about, then they started like panicking.
Mm-hmm.
Because before they were like, you'll see as they sort of like talk about
yeah.
what happened, but like the death penalty like lit a fire under their ass.
Mm.
So McKinney and Henderson both asked their girlfriends to lie and create alibis for them Ugh. And help them destroy evidence. And the girlfriends are named Kristen Price and Chastity Pasley.
Okay.
And because of that, and because they did it, they were both charged as accessories.
Oh, they did?
The fact. Yes.
I'm sorry, so, but if my boyfriend did something so stupid like that, and then was like, hey, babe, can you just, like, help me cover this shit up? Because, like, no. Absolutely not.
Well, no. But if you think about, like, these two people dated, though, like, Henderson and McKinney.
Yeah.
And, like, they're the type of people that are like, oh, let's go rob him and beat him and leave him and then go back into town and pick another fight. That's not the first time they did shit like that.
True, yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it's like, they know what these women know what they're in for
mm-hmm.
and probably agree with them and probably support them.
God.
And it's like, who knows what sort of like in Wyoming, what the attitude is about like stand by your man mm-hmm. kind of thing. Like it's everybody is a fucking idiot and I hate them all.
Yeah.
But at least these bitches were charged.
Good.
You know?
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I'm a totally an advocate to, like, stick by your partner and support them. But, like, in, like, normal shit. Like, you want to go change your career or you want to, like, save money to buy a crazy expensive car. I'm there for you, babe. But I'm not covering up your malicious, disgusting acts like that. And then to destroy evidence to help, like... Then you're implicating me.
Well, because they didn't see it as malicious or disgusting. They saw it as necessary, and he had it coming. You know?
Ugh.
That's the thing.
No, you got it coming. Piece of shit.
Seriously. At McKinney's pretrial, Sergeant Rob Debris testified that McKinney had stated in an interview on October 9th, right after his arrest, that he and Henderson had identified Matthew as a robbery target and pretended to be gay to lure him out to their truck. Yep. They also said that McKinney...
They pretended to be gay to, like, pick him up?
To pick him up so that they could, like, take him somewhere and rob him. They're saying, like, that was our plan. But then it went left because McKinney attacked him because Matthew put his hand on his knee.
Oh, okay. So you can pretend to be gay and mm-hmm. basically proposition someone. Why wouldn't you think he would try to... Why do you think that he wouldn't put his hand on your leg?
No, it's fucking stupid, and it's a lie, because they're, like, literally trying to think of anything other than, like, I want to punish and hurt this guy.
Yeah.
For who he is. You know? It's it's, like, they're fucking idiots.
Yeah.
So, then, also at the pretrial, Detective Ben Fritzen testified that Kristen Price... stated that McKinney told her that the violence against Matthew was triggered by how McKinney, quote, felt about gays. So, obviously, like, they're very different accounts where it's like, if he felt like he was in danger because Matthew put his hand on his knee is different than, like, oh, that's a gay guy. Let's target him and beat him.
Oh, my God.
You know, even though the first one doesn't make any fucking sense.
No.
Like, it's... Ugh. Chastity... I don't know if her name is Chastity or Chastity, but it's spelled Chastity, and that's stupid.
Who cares? She's
Chastity Pasley pleaded guilty in December of 1998, because she was just like, I'm not...
Yeah.
You know, so, like, goodbye.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, now then, you don't want any part of it? Now you want to back out?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like, how about you think about that before
this ever happened?
Get rid of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what evidence they destroyed?
I don't. I don't think that they did it well. And well,
clearly.
But they know because they already saw the stuff when they were arrested and the truck was searched for the other fight.
Yeah.
So it's like, even if they, like, the evidence was already on record.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know that they said that their alibis, that they were with them that night rather than, like, being out at the bar.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not sure if it was, like,
yeah,
what the degrees of that were.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely, what is that? Obstruction of justice? Because,
right,
like, you can't, like, if you're going to act as somebody's alibi, you have to make sure that shit checks out. Like, you're not.
Yeah.
And we say this a lot. It's like, you're not being real smart criminals. Not that I want you to be, but you're just, like, kind of dumb at doing this. Like,
so they are being very stupid, and I'm going to get into, like, a little bit of that later, mm-hmm. but I'm just, I'll get into that later. Okay, so on April 5th, 1999, Henderson pled guilty to murder and kidnapping. And to avoid the death penalty, he agreed to testify against McKinney.
Okay.
So he's already, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
trying to, like, make a deal and everything. And, like, honestly, being smarter because he knows he's in a corner mm-hmm. and, you know. He, instead of the death penalty, Henderson was sentenced to 2 consecutive life terms. So he's, like, done and dusted, gone.
Yeah.
You know, locked up. But Henderson wasn't the one that, like, inflicted the injuries that caused the death.
Okay.
He beat him, but it was, like,
yeah.
There was, like, McKinney was the one that did all the head trauma and stuff.
Okay.
But at Henderson's sentencing, his lawyer maintained that he was not targeted because he was gay. Even though they were like, oh, let's pretend to be gay to lure him out. They, like, said that. So it's just they keep just ping-ponging back and forth about why Matthew was targeted and what, you know, what fueled this murder.
Okay.
So McKinney's trial took place in October and November of 1999. And McKinney's lawyer attempted to put forward a gay panic defense. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes. And it's
fucking bullshit. I had not heard of it. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
So I looked it up because it was, like, actually, like, a thing that was allowed and, like, considered, like, insanity defense, gay panic defense.
And yeah,
like,
and it works. That? It work. I think it's how, like, many cases out of how many it actually worked.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And so a gay panic defense, if you're unaware, is a legal strategy in which a defendant claims they acted in a state of violent, temporary insanity, committing assault or murder, usually, because of unwanted same-sex advances, which is the same excuse. Like, there's also, like, the trans panic mm-hmm. defense if you find somebody out that somebody is transgender.
Yeah, like, in the and there, it's worked for, like, cases I know for trans people, because mm-hmm. like, they'll be in the middle of sex with a trans person and realize that the person isn't the sex that they, or that they are, but they perceive them as a different sex,
right.
And then they end up murdering or assaulting that person because they're angry mm-hmm. that they got tricked or whatever, and plead temporary insanity and get off on murdering someone.
Yeah. So literally, like, my eyeballs melted.
Yeah.
And I was like, that cannot be real. That cannot be a real thing you say in court. Mm-hmm. And, like, of course it is,
yep.
And but we see that all the time, and we, like, that sort of, like, oh, the panic thing, which to me, I'm like, okay, does that not then immediately point to prejudice and bias?
Yeah.
Because, like, remember from Renisha McBride, he was like, oh, I panicked and I shot her.
Yeah.
And it's like, because she was black.
Exactly, yeah.
It's the same, and now I'm equating, mm-hmm. I'm doing the thing I said don't do, where I'm equating
but
that, so I apologize for that. However, it is, like, it using that defense, to me, points directly to that inherent mm-hmm. bias,
yeah,
which is, like, then points to this is a hate crime, because nobody had been saying that at this point. That's why they keep trying to go, oh, well, it wasn't fueled by this. It was fueled by how he felt about it, whatever, because it's a different punishment if it's a hate crime.
Yeah.
Even though he's, like, up for murder with the death penalty. I'm like, you're splitting hairs at this point, bro.
Yeah. And that's literally how these people get away with it, because...
Yeah.
Like, and that's why I could not be a lawyer. I feel like I'm, like, equipped with the, you know, like, I could be in a courtroom and, like, go up against somebody. Like, I feel like I'm very argumentative, and I could definitely win an argument, but my reason I can't be a lawyer is because I could not take on a client like this and come up with little splitting hairs things to get them off from killing someone. Like, that is, it's not, like,
it's reprehensible. Wrong.
It's wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And it's, so you'd be like president of the debate club, but not a lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like,
that's
what McKinney's whole defense, like, was founded on, was like the gay panic defense, which I just, but then Kristen Price, who, like, the girlfriend, right, who is being charged with an accessory after the fact, comes in and she says, and she's McKinney's boyfriend, so she's, her boyfriend's on trial, and she sits on the stand and she says that, like, this was absolutely because Matthew was gay. They targeted him because he was gay. They pretended to be gay to gain his trust, and they murdered him because of that. So she stood up there. This is all at pre-trial, I think. This is the real trial. I don't know why I said that. So she sat there and basically was like, I know him. I know about how he thinks. I know about how he feels. And this is why he did that.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the fact that he, like, came back into town and then picked a fight with two Latinx men is, like, he just is, like, a raging white guy.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, her testimony in saying that, I think, is, like, yes, she is terrible for doing what she did, but, like, and I guess I don't know what fueled her testifying against her boyfriend, whether it was, like, self-preservation or actually, like, learning and trying to make up for what she did, but it's, like,
do you think maybe it was a part of the deal? Something. Like, maybe she got a lesser
charge? It was part of the deal.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just trying to find, like, some... thing positive or something.
Yeah, I don't know if there is one, because, you know, I think that a lot of people that do testify against their significant other, or, you know, somebody that they even actually were like, she was implicated in all of this stuff, like, she was involved, so it just feels like really the only motive there is because, like, well, I'll get a lesser charge. I'd rather lose my boyfriend. I'm going to lose him anyway. He's going away.
Well, yeah.
You know, he's regardless. Done.
Yeah.
So I'll do this just to get, you know, some time off my sentence or whatever it was that they were charging her with.
Yeah. I didn't look into, like, what she's up to now or what she's doing now, but that would be, like, the thing I think that would understand, or, like, help me understand, like, what her whole thing is, because if she's like George Zimmerman and is like signing fucking Skittles packages, but if she is like working in her life to make the world better for people like Matthew, then it's like that's when I would believe in the, like, people changing and learning, which I do believe is a thing, but, like, I don't know this is a tangent anyways. Thankfully, in this trial, the judge rejected the gay panic defense.
Good.
So he was like, that's bullshit. Don't want to hear any more about it.
Which it shouldn't... So, I feel like it shouldn't be... I might have read something at some point where it was like certain states have, like...
Yeah, I don't think
I can't remember which states it is, but there is a few states that still accept that as a defense.
Well, yeah,
but most of them have been
we've come a little further in the 21 years since this happened.
Ugh.
So McKinney's lawyer pivoted and said that McKinney and Henderson only wanted to rob Matthew but not kill him. Mm. And you're like, okay.
Okay, we believe you, you piece of shit.
Yeah. So then the prosecutor named Cal Rurusha argued that the killing was premeditated and driven by greed and violence rather than Matthew's sexuality. Which, huh. I was like, what? The prosecutor said that? But I think that it was because, like, the definition of hate crime in Wyoming at that time, uh-huh. like, it didn't include sexuality. So I think that it was a more sure bet to get them guilty if they just, like, took the hate crime thing off the table.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that's my theory mm-hmm. about that. So after, like, this whole trial, yada, 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 the jury found McKinney not guilty of premeditated murder.
Okay.
But guilty of felony murder.
What's the difference?
So, I think that's, like, buying into the gay panic thing.
Okay.
So, it was, like, no, meaning that they weren't, like, at the bar, he decided to kill him.
Okay.
But that something changed during the robbery that then he killed him.
Got it. Okay.
And, like, whatever that something was, like, that's what they're saying is, like, he put his hand on his knee. So that's mm-hmm. the gay panic thing. But I don't know. Whatever.
I mean,
so
even if he did, like, actually assault him in any way, it was, like, you...
He, who? Matthew assaulted yeah. them?
Yeah. Like, if his whole theory is that, well, he put his hand on my leg, which is then technically sexual assault, but you didn't...
That's not sexual assault, no, is that?
I mean, if we're at work and some guy, your coworker, puts his hand on your leg, I'd be like,
that's harassment.
Harassment. Yeah, something, but
assault is different.
No, I'm trying to explain, like, how even their attempt to say that in whatever way was a violation of what they were
doing
is saying that, well, you violated him by propositioning him from the get-go and lying about your sexual orientation.
But they went back on that. So they're saying that they did that, and then they're saying they didn't do that. So their stories are just changing.
And they're grasping at straws
because of, like,
to try
whatever
to explain
they're trying to do.
The switch in, and which I guess with the changing it to a felony murder or whatever, they essentially got what they wanted.
Yeah.
Because it's technically the same thing. They got a lesser charge based on whatever the change was, which was the harassment or assault, whatever the fuck you want to call it. But that was on you. You made that happen from the get-go. I don't understand how that's even considered.
It's literally like baiting somebody, and then when they
take the bait,
then you murder them, and that's your defense?
Yeah. It's absolutely outrageous. It's just outrageous.
That's the thing with, like, okay, I'm gonna go on another tangent here.
Okay.
But when, like, law enforcement or FBI or whatever do, like, set up a sort of operation to, like, trap somebody into selling drugs or, mm-hmm. you know, accepting money for sex or whatever, and it's like, how is that not entrapment?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they are setting up the perfect circumstances. Mm-hmm. You're not finding somebody, like, out of the blue doing this. You are entrapping them. Mm-hmm. How is that? And that's exactly what these guys are doing.
Yeah.
How is that allowed? Because isn't it innocent until proven guilty? And then, like, but you're entrapping them, so you're creating a false pretense for them to be guilty. Then it's not really guilty.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And it's, and you know what just it just blows my mind is that you're telling their whole thing was like, we're going to pretend to be gay to, you know, entice this guy and make him more vulnerable, because when he's not in that situation, he's just a normal guy. He's just like you. But when you put him and yourself and him in a situation like that, you're doing it to lower his guard. You're doing it mm-hmm. to make him more vulnerable so you can take advantage of him. So mm-hmm. how in any way is this not just in your mind, as a normal human being, I guess these are not normal people or actually people that think that way, how in your mind is that okay in any scenario? It's not.
No.
So it's just, oh my God.
I just, like, there is so much I just don't understand about this. And then one of the more, like, miraculous things to happen in this, after McKinney was found guilty of felony murder, Matthew's parents stepped in and made a deal that took the death penalty away from McKinney and just, like, allowed the judge to give him two consecutive life sentences without possibility of parole. So they literally saved this motherfucker's life.
Oh my God.
Like, the... I have chills. Like, I cannot imagine. Oh my God. Losing your child like that and then, like, being...
That takes some fucking strength. Like, saving strength.
Their murderer's life?
Yeah.
Oh,
that takes a lot of strength.
Oh my God.
To let that. I mean, but I can also see as, like, I'm not a mother, but I'm definitely a human being, and I don't, if it were me, I would, like, I'm not totally on board with the eye for an eye, you know? I think that, like, he's going to suffer
but this regardless. Guy, and though,
I mean, then that gets into a discussion of, like, who, so if you agree with the death penalty or not, which is, like...
Right, which, like, I don't agree with the death penalty, but if this was my kid, and this guy, like, has a history of violence...
Yeah.
It's not an eye for an eye. Like, he didn't just kill...
One.
Matthew, because if it was an eye for an eye, he would be beaten, he would be pistol whipped, he would be robbed, and he would be tied to a fucking fence and left out for 18 hours. That's an eye for an eye, you know? Yeah. I'm so upset.
I know. No, I get God. It. But it takes, like, as a human being, it takes a lot of fucking...
Yeah. It's unbelievable, like, the amount of, like, forgiveness.
Yeah.
And, like... Just it speaks to who they are. It speaks to who they raised Matthew to be.
Yeah,
you know,
I would be,
and they,
like, if this was, if I were there, like, the what's the kid's name again? Not Matthew.
McKinney.
If I were his parents, holy fuck, I would be like, we are to raise a boy like that. And then to be matched with parents who, my child took their life, and for them to be so gracious and understanding and forgiving to spare my son's life when that fact never once crossed my child's mind to spare another. Like, how do you even, how?
I don't know.
Like, how do you even justify, like,
I never thought about that.
I don't know. Like, I would be...
I mean, I didn't hear anything about, like, McKinney or Henderson's parents. And, like, I mean, if they... who knows if they gave interviews or anything, but it seemed like maybe they weren't around. I don't know. Like, I didn't hear anything about them. And it's, like, honestly, like...
Yeah.
You know, I don't need
but,
to.
But, like, imagine... But, what that, I would feel such, I like, shame as a parent to be like,
I know.
Yeah.
But after this, like, his parents, Matthew's parents, like, continued being friggin' amazing, and they started the Matthew Shepard Foundation, which is a an organization nationwide that fights for LGBTQ rights. It allows, it provides resources for LGBTQ youth, health resources, community resources, helping if you're homeless, if your parents kick you out, housing you, like, just, they, and they still are running it to today. That's like, amazing. 21 years later, like, they just have dedicated their lives to this and making sure that, like, stuff, like what happened to Matthew, both in Morocco and here, doesn't happen to anybody else. Yeah.
My God, such a horrible, horrible thing. To then go from what happened, you know, that he was already dealing with that and, like, trying to heal from what had already happened to him, and then to come back to the place where we're supposed to have freedom. We're supposed to have, you know, that's what America is about. And all, like, I think that's the facade that everybody's been putting up about what our country is actually. And it's just the opposite.
I know.
You know, you're not allowed to live freely. You're only allowed to live free under what somebody else finds acceptable.
Yeah. You're only allowed religious freedom if it's Christianity and it's about putting it in front of other people. Mm-hmm. This is the thing with, like, what the right is saying about the left right now. And it's like, I think that the Democratic Party and the left and everything is just, like, don't love it. Don't love anything. Mm-mm. Like, I'm like, I feel like I'm super socialist right now in this moment.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But, I mean, I say that without, like, a full understanding of what that means. What it is. You know.
Well, you know why? Yeah. It's because we do have somewhat of a understanding what the left and the right are, and we're like, we don't want to even be a part of either one of those things. So, like, kind of the other option is to just kind of be out there with, you know?
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, I think, I think the thing, because I've been trying to read a lot of, like, right media to understand more of that mindset that, you know, is going on right now. And a lot of what the argument against the left is saying is that, like, it is a place for hate. You're not allowed to be yourself. You're not allowed to speak your mind. All this kind of stuff. And I'm like, that it's actually fascinating because it's like, from my understanding as somebody who's, like, extreme left, is that it's the opposite of that, but, like, we do allow, like, people to speak their minds and have varying points of view as long as it doesn't silence anybody else. And what the right is arguing is speaking your mind is, you know, harmful and silencing to other people. So that's why we don't want that. But it's like there's the hatred and, like, everything that they're putting on the left. I'm like, that's what we feel from you. It's just that, like, we're a little bit more diverse, so like, it doesn't it's very hard to, like, wrap my mind around.
It's so overwhelming to me that I usually just get, like, my brain actually shuts down when it comes to it. Like, I'm just like, like, it's just so frustrating to me.
But when Obama was elected, the left, instead of, like, continuing the momentum, we just, like, took a step back and relaxed, being like, oh, we made it. But that was what allowed the Tea Party to gain momentum, like, fucking 4chan and all that shit, because people felt silenced and not heard. So it's like, you want to strike a balance between, like, being respectful and hearing the other side while also, like, pushing the needle and, like, re-centering where the middle is. Because that's the thing, is that the left, moderate left, is actually, like, globally worldwide middle, you know? And we're just sort of, like, so skewed. But if you also think about it, we are founded, like, the first Americans that came over here, or first, let me say this carefully, the first immigrants that came over here and stole land from the Native Americans were Puritans, meaning no sex, white people, no fun, like, super strict morality stuff. And that's what our country is based on. So it's like, it makes sense that, like, we are fighting so hard to get progressive ideas because it's just not been anything. We tell ourselves that we are, but we're not.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Anyways, speaking of super right wing, when anything gay happens, who shows up? The Westboro Baptist Church.
Of course they do.
So they ended up picketing the whole fucking trial. They picketed Matthew's funeral.
Really?
And they carried signs. Of course they did. Oh, I would expect nothing less. Ugh. Okay. They carried signs saying Matt in hell. Mm-hmm. And one that says God hates F word. The slander, the gay slander, not fuck.
Yeah.
The one that I don't want to say.
Yeah, I get it.
Okay. Okay, so his friend Romaine Patterson did a counter protest where she and a bunch of other people dressed like angels with big wings and stood in front of the Westboro Baptist Church and like created a line so that everybody could go into the funeral undisturbed. And she, from this thing to this day, she still does that and still does these counter protests dressed like angels with her foundation called Angel Action. And it's literally just like to protect from this like spewing of hatred, and I just think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
So
are they called something like
the, Angel something Action?
Angel Action. Okay.
Yeah. So this case was covered by 2020 because everybody covered it and they did it. And then a few years after that, a producer from 2020 named Stephen Jimenez published a book that alleged that Matthew and McKinney, like dealt the blow that killed Matthew, were occasional sex partners, and he called Matthew a meth dealer. And this is why I'm like, they're acting stupid, because McKinney and Henderson, being from Wyoming, probably were just fucking druggies, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There is no evidence of Matthew being involved in that at all, and like I mean, not that I could find, I don't know, like, you know,
yeah,
whatever. But also, like, it's that thing where it's like, oh, where there's drugs and there are lovers and just like putting a ton of like sordid, like scandalous details in there to take away from what really happened. And you're like, I'm just like, what the hell? And then the backlash against that book was like extreme. My reaction being like, how dare you? How dare you take this thing that has affected thousands, hundreds and thousands of people and is this man's life, and you like sully it with like fucking rumors? Like, what is this, TMZ? God. Not even, because TMZ like corroborates their sources. It was just like,
at least they do that. Jesus.
Yeah, it was just like so obviously just like such a money grab. Ugh, disgusting. And like, it, so, and but during the coverage of Matthew's murder and trial and everything, because of the how they didn't, how they skirted around the hate crime of it, it sparked a national conversation about hate crime and hate crime legislation, and a big push to change the law came out of it, which was great, because under federal and Wyoming state law at that time, so federal, countrywide, it said that crimes committed on the basis of sexual orientation would not be persecuted as hate crimes. So, like, insane. So obviously, like, that reaction was like, we need better protection for our people. Like, this has to be a thing. And like immediately within hours of Matthew being discovered, his two friends, Walt Bolden and Alex Trout, began to contact the media outlets saying that he was attacked because he was gay. And the prosecutor Rarucha said, quote, they were calling the county's attorney's office, calling the media and indicating Matthew is gay. And we don't want that fact to go unnoticed. So they were just like so concerned that it would just be swept under the rug, not addressed or anything. And it, they really wanted to make sure that it was known what caused this and why he is at risk, because they wanted to protect everybody else. Like, you can't just ignore that fact.
Yeah.
But then a close friend of the Shepherd family gave an interview that, like, I don't even know who this bitch was. Or, like, she's just somebody that says, you know, she could have said, could have been a close friend, could have said she was a close friend, who knows? But then she went and said that those friends were calling it because they wanted to make Matthew a poster child for whatever their cause is. And I'm like, they didn't make Matthew a poster child. The people that fucking murdered him did.
Murdered him did, yeah.
So sit the fuck down. Just sit down. I hate you. Ugh. So in the following session after the trial of the Wyoming legislature, a bill was introduced that would define attacks motivated by victim identity as a hate crime. So... Mm-hmm. I don't know what the fuck a hate crime was before that, to be honest. But, including sexuality, including, you know, race, all that stuff. And the measure failed in a tie. So literally every year since then, this bill has come forward and failed in some regard. And it wasn't until 2009... that Obama passed the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act. It took until 2009.
How many years after?
That's, I mean, it was 1999 to 10 years. So
10 years? Wow.
Took 10 years. Jeez. Which is just insane.
Yeah.
But it's in law now, unless Trump repealed it. Maybe he did. I don't know. I think I'm just starting a rumor with that. I don't think he did it, but insane, right?
Yeah, absolutely just insane.
So, like, for all of that, like, there's one. I want to end with a quote from gay rights activist John Stoltenberg, who said that to portray Shepard as a gay bashing victim is to present an incomplete account of his victimization. Quote, keeping Matthew as the poster boy of gay hate crime and ignoring the full tragedy of his story has been the agenda for many gay movement leaders. Ignoring the tragedies of Matthew's life prior to his murder will do nothing to help other young men in our community who are sold for sex, ravaged by drugs, and generally exploited. And when I first read that, I was like, whoa, like,
yeah,
what is he saying? And then I realized it was like, it was just saying, he was just saying that to like only talk about Matthew's murder is half of Matthew's story. Because even if he hadn't been murdered, he was victimized and raped in Morocco. And like, that is enough to fuck a person up forever. Yeah. And that's what so many people who aren't murdered are faced, and we need to solve that problem, because if we solve that problem, then like we can solve the murder too. But it shouldn't just be only about the sensationalized murder, like the violence against gay people, LGBTQIA plus people of every color needs to be addressed. And I thought, you know, And that's what the Matthew Shepard organization aims to do, is to, like, help people before they're murdered.
Yeah.
And in October 2018, Matthew's ashes were interred at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., where he has found his final resting place. This week's episode was written and edited by me, Devin Balsamo Gillis, with music by Holly Amber Church and social media by Kelsey Gruenberg.
For pictures and sources, please follow us on Instagram at onthearbehalf_pod and on Twitter at onthearbehalf_.
Please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen.
On Their Behalf, thank you for listening.